Welcome back to Word and Table, a weekly podcast about liturgy, sacrament, and the great tradition of Christian worship and why it is vital in our world today. I'm your host, Alex Wilgus, and I'm here, as usual, with Father Stephen Gauthier. Welcome back, Father Stephen.
Great to be back. Good morning.
Father Stephen is the canon theologian of the Diocese of the Upper Midwest in the Anglican Church in North America. And I misspoke, Father Stephen. I gave our earlier intro, but we are now, sadly, a bi-weekly podcast for this season. So just to make clear.
For a season, yes.
So a couple weeks back, Father Stephen, I preached a message on Matthew 22. Mm-hmm. And in it, Jesus is asked this question by one of the scribes. He says, "What is the greatest commandment in the law? What is the greatest commandment?" And Jesus gives his famous answer, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. So I preached a sermon on this, but I wanted to ask you about this, to unpack Jesus's answer here, because it's even when during my study on it, I realized how profound it was and how it was the correct answer to the question, mm-hmm. but there's so much more implication in it than that. So let's have you unpack this moment in Jesus's ministry.
Well, it's a profound moment. It seems simple enough. I think our listeners have heard before that there are 613 commandments in the Torah. They have been counted. And
yeah.
There are 613. And actually, a little bit of trivia I love is the rabbis like to tell us there are 365 things not to do. So there's something not to do every day of the week.
Got it.
Okay,
yeah.
Those are called the negative commandments, and the rest are the positive commandments. So at first it seems a classic legal technical question.
Yeah.
You know, what's the greatest commandment? What's
see,
really?
See, when I started preaching on this, I actually, being not Jewish, I just assumed he was asking for 1 out of 10 commandments. You know, which 1 out of 10? But it turns out that there's a lot more than that.
So yes, it's a much more
harder
complicated
question.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you'll notice what he has is not 1 of the 10.
Right.
So no, it's out of this hundreds of commandments, which one is first? A logical question. What's really interesting is Jesus gives him a lot more, and we have the same version of this in Mark. There they say, what's the first of the commandments? You know, in Matthew, it's which is the greatest? Mm-hmm. Which is first? And Jesus, what's really interesting in this, he gives them more than they bargained for. They only ask for one, which is the greatest.
He gives them two.
Is the first. Right. In Matthew, he says, and the second is like it. You know, in Mark, he says, the second is this.
Hmm.
So it's really, I think it's one of the first important messages, a critical one for Christians of understanding the law.
Yeah, yeah.
Is he's basically saying it's not possible. You know, they have to be looked at together. We talk about like the two tables of the commandments, duties towards God, duty towards our neighbor. They can't be separated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sort of we have this in John. Remember 1 John, he says, if anyone says I love God and hates his brother, he's a liar. For he who does not love his brother whom he has seen mm-hmm. cannot love God whom he has not seen. So the idea is that, you know, first Jesus is telling us that this cannot, it cannot exist in isolation. You know, we have to understand there's a commandment. But unless we think, okay, now I know what to focus on, I think, don't ever make that mistake. There's a second just like it.
Right.
That goes with it. And this ties with another big Christian idea. Is remember, what does he say to Saul? Remember, Saul's persecuting the church. And it should be surprising to us. When he speaks to Jesus, he says, Saul, why are you persecuting
me?
Mm. He doesn't say my followers. He says, why are you persecuting me? In the famous chapter of Matthew 25, remember the final judgment, you know, I was hungry, you know, I was thirsty, etc. He says, truly, I tell you, what you didn't do to the least of these my brothers, you did it to me. What you did rather to the least of you did it to me.
Mm.
So that this is the direct connection that we have between love of neighbor and love of God. In a sense, very often how we love God is through our neighbor.
Yeah.
That's the real place where we can actually love God. What we do to our neighbor, we do for God.
Right. So Jesus is saying that loving God is not just this abstract internal thing in our mind or our interiorly in our prayers, that loving neighbor is almost like incarnating love of God.
Exactly. Mother Teresa famously loved to say, love has to be put into action.
Hmm.
It's always action. You might ask it, look at the most fundamental theology. God doesn't need anything.
Right.
God's always existed. Why did God make the world? Love always goes into action. I mean, you know, that's what love does. Love gives. You know, it's there's giving within the Trinity, but it's even bigger. You know, it creates.
Yeah.
Sort of like the love of a man and woman. You know, with new life.
Right. there's this physical thing that goes along with that. So I hear. Great. So love of God and love of neighbor. So let me ask you something, Stephen. How is it that this sort of question about the law, how does this relate to our faith as Christians? You know, what's our relationship to Jesus' definition of the law here? Because he's talking about the Jewish law.
Mm-hmm. Well, how the church has seen this traditionally has been is that the Ten Commandments are still just as valid. Mm-hmm. They haven't lost any of their authority. But it's the Ten Commandments is understood through the lens of these two great commandments.
Okay.
You see, this is how we understand. How do we interpret? How do we understand the Ten Commandments? Well, we understand them in the light of the love of God and love of neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
When through the eyes of love, we will properly. It's sort of interesting. The position that's taken in the New Testament, Paul talks about this twice. He basically says, you know, if you love your neighbor, you will automatically keep all the commandments. Let me actually read these two passages. In Romans, for example, he says, owe no one anything except to love each other. For the one who loves another has fulfilled the law.
Mm.
So he goes on to explain. He says, for the commandments, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not covet, and any other commandment are summed up in this word, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Love does no wrong to a neighbor, therefore love is the fulfillment of the law.
Hmm.
And in Galatians, he famously goes on and says, for you are called to freedom, brothers. Only don't use your freedom as an opportunity for the flesh, but through love serve one another. For the whole law is fulfilled in one word. A word, by the way, in Hebrew, it's the same as commandment.
Yeah.
It's actually the 10 words, you know. Is in one word, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. So Paul's basic argument is this. You say, you know, if you actually love God and neighbor and just acted according to that, you'd never do anything that violated the commandment. Matter of fact, famously, St. Augustine, in one of his perhaps most famous sermons, it was on 1 John, he said, love and do whatever you want. Literally, love and do what you will. And he goes on to explain. He says, let the root of love be in you. Nothing can spring from it but good. So Augustine said, this is a sure sign. If you love, you know, think about it. Think of the commandments. When you have someone you deeply love, let's say you fall in love, you don't have to write down, like, notes on the kitchen, on magnets on the refrigerator door saying, hey, don't punch out, don't say ugly things, don't steal from. The thought would never cross your mind.
Right.
You don't need to have a lot of things of not to do. When you love, you're not going to be doing those things.
Right.
However, there's a flip side that I think is really important here. So not only the good news is if we love, we're automatically going to be doing everything else. We don't have to learn 613 commandments.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to do everything that really needs to be done if we love. But ironically, if we don't love, we can keep every commandment and still violate God's law. This is the classic example of why we keep coming to the Sabbath. Of the commandments, the Sabbath is the most obviously humanitarian commandment.
Yeah.
Because it's when it's explained, it says even your animals need a day of rest.
Yeah.
Your servants, no one, I don't mean just you taking a day off. I mean the servants, everything. Uh-huh. No one works. This is a day about rest and recuperation. So the ultimate humanitarian, it's a to-do commandment. You know, it's the honor, it's not do not do this, an honor. It's a humanitarian commandment. The Pharisees, who kept this scrupulously, turned it on its head. They turned, by literally keeping the commandment, they turned it on its head to become an anti-humanitarian measure.
Right.
A woman who's been bound for 18 years, you know, is hunched over in pain. They think, you know, what does the leader of the synagogue say? Come on, there are a lot of other days to get healed. Come back some other day. Where Jesus said, tomorrow, like, basically, next hour is too long to wait.
Right.
He says, you know, something falls into a pit, you'd pull it out.
Right.
So the basic point, I think, that the great commandments are, this is how we understand the Ten Commandments, is always in the eyes of love. This is what we see in the Sermon on the Mount, where Jesus goes through. He said, you know, you've heard that it was said to the ancient, don't kill. But he's saying, if you're angry with your brother, you've already done this.
Yeah.
You see, that's just not committing adultery. This is about not lusting. I mean, just, love would always tell us those other parts.
Yes.
Love would tell us it's not enough I don't actually punch out my enemy.
Right. So it's like if we're following the positive side of the law of, yeah, to loving, then the it renders the negative commandments unnecessary if we're, right, if we're truly,
we will automatically fulfill them.
Right.
We don't have to worry, they will happen automatically.
Yeah, we won't do the things they're saying not to do.
And conversely, if we don't love, we can keep the letter, we know how cruel, we can keep the letter of every commandment. Mm-hmm. It'll turn on its head, it'll become something ugly.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, this is where Phariseeism comes from. I mean, in the sense of what we use the term to describe, but basically sort of a hypocritical, very self-righteous, very depreciating view towards others. It turns everything on its head.
Right.
You can do all the right things with the wrong heart.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And very often, for example, even when we talk about charity, let's move away. Remember Paul in Corinthians, in 1 Corinthians 13, he talks about, he said, I gave everything I had to the poor, didn't have love, it would profit me nothing. Mm-hmm. But think about the reaction of the poor. Mother Teresa famously said to people who came to help her out, who wanted to join her, that they had to have a zeal, a love for the poor.
Mm.
She said, you know, we have a lot of work to do. She said, but if you don't have that zeal to serve the poor, she said, pack your bags, no need to stay,
yeah,
because they need the love.
Right.
Right. You know, you can get all the stuff, you know, in the sense of we can get all the, have things done for us and still feel sort of demeaned.
Mm.
We're getting services and things, but we feel the lesser for it.
Yeah.
And the thing, if you've ever seen films of Mother Teresa and her sisters, the respect and the love they show to the people they serve is as good as the food. One thing I wanted to say while we're talking about commandments,
mm-hmm,
you know, sometimes people ask this question, I thought maybe in this context it would be a good thing to deal with. What exactly is the numbering of the commandments? You know, the Ten Commandments, we all agree there are 10, but we don't actually agree what the 10 are.
Really?
Yeah.
Explain.
Well, for example, if you're a Roman Catholic, we talk about the tables of the law. There are 3 commandments on the one side, and there are 7 on the other, 7 to neighbor. Those who are Anglican and Reformed, for example, or Eastern Orthodox, we have 4 commandments to God, and only 6 on the other side. So what happens is how you divide the commandments differs.
Interesting.
So if you didn't realize, when people talk about the fifth commandment, it's different depending on whether you're Eastern Orthodox or Roman Catholic.
Oh, okay.
It's not always the same thing when you call out the numbers. So I thought, if you're unaware of that, but sometimes it confuses people.
Sure. So what's the Orthodox, Anglican, or Reformed?
Well, the Orthodox, you know, they have this love of this. First of all, one of the reasons we get them a little is because of Exodus. The commandments appear twice in the Torah, once in Exodus chapter 20 and once in Deuteronomy chapter 5.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, using sort of the way the Septuagint deals with it, that's what the Orthodox do, and that's what we do, and that's what Reformed churches do,
mm-hmm,
is we basically say, remember, what's the first commandment? And we say the first commandment is not to have any other gods but God. Mm-hmm. And then we have a second commandment is take no graven image. Now, St. Augustine, following a different tradition, sees that as one commandment. The part of not having other gods is you don't have idols.
Right.
So they treat that together as the first commandment.
I see.
So those are all, they're all there, but they're all a single commandment.
Uh-huh.
Where we have two. We have one commandment, you know, to put God before all others, to have no other gods. And the second is have no graven images.
Right.
We treat those as two commandments.
Okay.
In the St. Augustine, in the Catholic world, and the Lutherans follow that are like Catholics that way, they follow Augustine, and they say that's just, they're all there, but it's one commandment.
Mm.
So we're one off, right? So what happens when we get to the end of the commandments?
Yeah, it's a good question.
Well, how much, there are 2 coveting commandments,
really?
If you're Roman Catholic or Lutheran, and we only have one.
Okay.
And I'll say in our defense, if you looked at what we quoted today when I quoted from Romans, where he said, he just talked about do not covet.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, I went through the list. He went,
sure,
do not covet. So what happens is the Roman Catholics and based on Augustine and the and Lutherans separate coveting our neighbor's wife from coveting our neighbor's goods.
I see.
Those are different commandments.
Huh.
One is basically against the sin of lust, and one is against the sin of avarice.
Okay, I see what you mean.
And you may say, what about the commandment of adultery? Well, that's against the acts, you know, sexual, you
I
know,
see.
Sexual immorality as an act. The other against lust itself.
Lust itself, yeah.
Yeah. But so if somebody wonders, so guests remember that, you know, the whole question why we get off is, the first commandment, does it have both? Everyone has all the commandments, all the words.
Mm-hmm.
But the graven image part is part of the first commandment if you're a Roman Catholic or a Lutheran, whereas
right.
we have that as a separate commandment in its own right.
Okay. But they make up for it with the no lusting.
They divide the coveting and, you know, separate the coveting. You know, Roman Catholics do, for example, between, again, coveting your neighbor's wife versus coveting in our neighbor's goods. One's typically used as the ninth commandment is about lust. The tenth commandment is about greed and avarice.
Okay. Oh, that's very interesting. I didn't know that. Nice.
But some people probably run into this. You're quoting a commandment and people look like, don't you know the Bible? But they come from another tradition.
Right.
You're the number wrong.
So how do we read the Ten Commandments, or how does it apply to the other commandments? How do we read the commandments through this one?
Well, Jesus showed us the start of that. We think, for example, when he goes in the Sermon on the Mount and says, okay, the commandment actually says, don't kill. And the Pharisees thought they were being very devout by saying, you know, we shouldn't add to God's word. God, he doesn't say anything else. He said, we don't kill.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but Jesus is saying, no, really at the heart of this is anger would be the same thing. It's what's really wrong is something deeper.
Yeah.
And it's basically the reverse of love.
I see. Yeah.
It's, you know, instead of loving, it's the exact opposite. And if we look, again, when he talks about adultery, it's not just enough that we're not committing adultery. It's the fact he talks about lust. Well, again, lust isn't treating a person as a thing, as an object. Instead of someone to be loved and served, is somebody to be profited from and seen as an object, clearly is not consistent with loving them.
Yeah.
Remember, the great commandment, the new commandment Jesus tells us, he gives us at the Last Supper in John, is to love others as love one another as I have loved you.
Yeah.
And that's love that doesn't look for anything.
Right.
It's always about what other people need, not my needs, but the needs of others.
Sure, sure.
God's always about others.
Yeah. So, in a sense, the law comes out of the... Does this connect to how when Jesus says that, you know, it's not what goes into a person that defiles him, but it's what comes out of the heart that defiles
him. Well, that's true. Right? Yeah. That'd be the same notion. You know, what you got it wrong about what you should be embarrassed about. You know, what's sinful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, what really is terrible in the eyes of God are the terrible things that we keep in our heart, the non-love in our heart. All those examples of that.
Sure, sure. So it's almost like the greatest commandment is the one that gets us to look deeper into our heart and to whether there's a root of love there, a root of something else.
Yeah, all of these are simply means to an end, and the end is love, because God is love.
Hmm.
You know, just as it says, you know, Paul says, you know what it's all about? He says at the end of time, he says, everything will be subjected to Christ, and he'll subject himself to the Father so that God may be all in all.
Yeah.
The world is converging towards the center of God, which is love. That's what love is, always moving towards the center. And the opposite of love, sin, is always moving the opposite direction.
Sure.
Remember, what does it say about Judas? It's really horrifying words to me in Acts of the Apostles would describe he went off to his own place. Just, you know, just sort of wanders off. You know, so again, love brings us together.
He doesn't go toward the center.
We come together towards each other even as we approach God.
Yeah.
That's really the trajectory. You know what it's like? Is I remember before we had GPS and things, you know, in ministry, you often go to different places. You're a supply priest and things, you go to different places. And I would have to take things like from before Google Maps, what was it, MapQuest?
Right.
You know, I'd take MapQuest. And we'd get these directions. But, you know, sometimes you're just not reading right or something, and I'd be going alone. I'd say, wait a second. All I know is I want to remember, you could follow all these individual directions, right? They'd write them out, you know, turn left here, turn right there. But I always wanted to know was I wanted to see the physical map when I started to know that, oh, I'm basically going northeast.
Uh-huh.
That really helped me, because otherwise, if you're just following directions left and right, you could end up going south and west.
Right.
Because if you get a wrong turn or something.
Sure.
But I always had to remember, these are the specific directions, but never forget the fact, ultimately, we're heading north and east.
Sure, sure.
If I find myself not heading north and east, I don't care what I'm doing something wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's really what the commandments are working like.
So it's like the great commandment is just your general kind of internal compass in your head.
I'm supposed to
kind of go this way, but the law without it is just trying to follow the Google Maps directions, and you can get lost.
Without looking at the overall map.
Yeah.
Or another way, Jesus gave us another clue, the famous golden rule, where he said also, this summarizes all the commandments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we act like sometimes, gee, it's hard to know how I'm supposed to behave to people. And Jesus said, well, this is pretty easy.
Yeah.
Just ask honestly. You know, imagine looking at God and saying, this is honestly how I'd want somebody else to treat me.
Right, right, right.
I mean, we don't have any trouble. It's not like with kids. Sometimes when you're trying to say, you know, like cut a cake or something, and make sure to give your brother, you know, a a fair piece.
A fair piece, yeah.
Is a lot of us will say, okay, you can cut the cake, but he gets to choose the piece he wants.
Right, yeah. So it keeps you honest.
but that's the basic idea is that, you know, again, with do to others as you do to them as you would have done to you would be, that's infallible. We all know what that is. Like, let's say somebody does something really wrong to us. Well, we've done things really wrong to other people. We have to ask, when I really get caught with the goods, so to speak, mm-hmm. I've really done something bad. I'm really caught. You know, boy, they've got me. You know, how would I like to be treated in that situation?
Sure.
So we apply that rule when somebody else has done something to us.
Mm-hmm. Well, anything else on the greatest commandment, Father Stephen?
Oh, I think we have enough to work on.
Great. Awesome. Well, thanks, Father Stephen. Thanks so much. And thank you for listening to Word and Table. We'll be back in 2 weeks with more on liturgy, sacraments, and the great tradition of Christian worship. Bye now.